Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks, we're here again. Welcome to Politics Done Right. I'm Egberto Willis, your host. Thank you for spending 2 minutes of your Saturday with me. Want you to remember that this show is yours. I know you've seen what the topics that I have out there are going to be, but remember, as usual, you tell me when you want to move on. Please give us a call. The number is 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. If you want to speak, please make sure to push 1 so that I can see that you want to speak and I don't just go ahead and call on you and catch you at the wrong time. But again, the number is 646-929-2495. Give me a call. Let us talk. And again, thank you very much for listening. So what are the subjects for today that I've talked about thus far? We've spoken about, or I've wrote about, the Chuck Hagel massacre. It's a nice, beautiful farewell for Hillary Clinton. It's also gun control. Beautiful young lady in Chicago. Yet another casualty of our crazy gun control laws. And of course, there is the new Coffee Party project that we want to talk about, and that is engaging in all 435 districts in this country, so that in army parlance, our politicians can know that Coffee Party and the rest of middle class America, poor America, not so poor America, has deep penetration in their innermost politics for that matter. That's what it's all about. Engaging the politicians, and that is what we intend to do going forward. One of our board of directors came up with a program that we intend to follow to ensure that we are directly addressing 435 members of Congress and, of course, the respective 100 senators. We had an interesting jobs report this week, and I wrote a blog about it because the news gives you the job report, gives you a little bit of the incidentals, but it doesn't give you the reality of how it actually affects us all. How does it affect middle class America? So what I want to start the program with before talking to you guys is read this blog. Again, though, folks, please remember the telephone number is 646-929-2495 and push 1 if you want to speak. Here goes my blog titled Job Report Proves Austerity Fails. And in there, I had to get somewhat partisan because right now our gridlock is, in fact, partisan. So the second part of my title was GOP Path to Depression. And I hope after I read the article, we'll get a little bit of discussion about this before we move on. Here it goes. One definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Britain elected, meaning England, elected a conservative government that immediately adopted an austerity policy. They are now entering their third recession since the economic crisis. In other words, a triple dip. Thanks, Erica. I hope you stay on because I do want to talk to you about our 435 project and the other things that we have going. So thank you very much for being available. Let me finish with the vlog and then I'm going to get to you. By the way, folks, Eric is our president and he's working very hard on a new project I'm going to also ask him to talk about. Continuing with the vlog, Spain attempted austerity and as reported in the Bloomberg piece, adios austerity, but debt will still limit Spain's growth measures. It has been such a dismal failure that they are now realizing the wisdom of economists like Nobel Prize winning Paul Krugman. Spain's 32-month, this is from Bloomberg now, Spain's 32-month experiment with austerity at all costs as devised by Angela Merkel's budget ultras is drawing to a close. Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy oversaw 62 billion euros of tax hikes and spending cuts, 851,000 job losses, and remember that's a much smaller country, and three different deficit targets, all in his first year in office. Now European Union budget enforcers are ready to ease up on the beleaguered premier. 38 hours later, the National Statistics Institute duly confirmed that Spain was indeed suffering a serious deterioration in the economy. The pace of economic contraction more than doubled in the fourth quarter, when the tax hikes Rajoy had delayed to try and win power in the south region of Andalusia finally kicked in. Unemployment hit a record 26%. Austerity, my folks. The shift reflects a changing consensus among policymakers, which has seen the IMF join economists, including Nobel Prize winner Paul Krugman, in arguing that too much austerity is self-defeating. It damages economic activity, reduces tax revenues, and tips economies into the vicious cycle of deeper spending cuts and falling output that the Greeks have been suffering since 2010. And I continue with the blog. Now those were the words of Bloomberg. Now my words. Every country that has attempted this path has suffered the same outcome. Yet, the GOP continues to hold the American economy and with that the middle class hostage to austerity type policies that refusing to enact the president's stimulative policies that would not only increase employment but lay the groundwork for increased tax recipes and economic activity. With interest rates at low or record lows near zero, this is the most appropriate time to rebuild our failing infrastructure that will be much more expensive to rebuild in later years, even as it negatively affects our economics. The unemployment report released today should give every American pause. It shows a trend that has been evident throughout this recovery. Private jobs in retail, construction, and healthcare are up. Public sector jobs, government jobs in both the state and federal governments are down. What is ironic is the country's population grows and needs more. I regress. What is ironic is as the country's population grows and needs more services as society from government, they are being laid off. Many will complain about slow government service as an indication that government services are inherently poor without realizing that that is the exact outcome Republicans are hoping for in order to move the privatization ideology forward. Profit for a few from taxes paid by the many. Private sector jobs are growing as both state and federal government are laying workers off. This means just maintaining government levels of employment would have provided a much better employment picture, likely at least 2% lower, since the maintenance of these jobs would have ensured increased spending by these employees who would have kept your local sandwich shop, your local theater, your grocery store, employing more folk. Additionally, the tax base would be less deteriorated. It is important that we understand that it's not about debt, it's not about money, but it is about the motion, the movement of money through an economy that makes economic activity. I just added that. It is a failure of government policy that has exacerbated this downturn. Republicans not allowing the institution of job creation policies is not simply a display of intransigence. It is a penalization of the American middle class to force an ideology they do not want. After all, we had an election, didn't we? It is a systematic destruction of government and faith in government to enhance a private sector so out of balance with government that we, the people, that it would ultimately overwhelm democracy. Republicans often use Greece as a scare tactic to make Americans believe that the current deficit is a bigger problem than it really is. The social austerity, even as they continue to build an outdated 20th century military, would in fact put America in a worse position than Greece. Greece is selling off public assets, the assets of we, the people, to a wealthy few. This was attempted in Panama, the place that I'm from, and as they should, the population revolted to stop the continued middle-class pilfer. It happens to be, and I'm off topic here, it happens to be that that was in my city. And what the country attempted to do is take public land that was getting constant rents, 20 years of rents, and the rents coming constantly in, meaning bringing cash flow in. They decided they were going to do a one-time sale to a private company who then would re-rent this property to whomever wanted, and they would be the recipient of that cash flow and not the people. It's the kind of things that we are trying to attempt here in America as well. One can only hope, back on text, one can only hope that the American middle class will open their eyes before it is too late. Too late is a path to depression where the wealthy buys up the public assets on the cheap. The January jobs report, while positive yet average, has many red flags that do not get coverage. It shows little to no wage growth when adjusted for inflation and a deteriorating public sector. This poor recovery is political. I mean, it's not intrinsically or it has nothing to do with the real economy. It's political. Until the American middle class engages and demands the terms, the status quo will prevail. Whenever the status quo prevails, the middle class loses. Okay, I'm going to take the caller at 908. 908, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hey, Egberto, John from Jersey again.
Hey, John from Jersey, talk to me, my friend.
Good. I've been hearing that, too. I heard that today MSNBC was talking. There were two gentlemen talking about the same thing, what Paul Krugman's been talking about. You know,
sure.
I've heard others speak about this, like, for the past year or so, and I absolutely agree. You know, like, if we are borrowing money at way less than 1% from other Americans who can put it into treasuries, which are actually the largest that put into treasuries, not China.
Yes.
And not other countries. It's Americans, okay?
Thank
it's Americans.
Sir. Thank you for telling the truth, sir. Continue, please.
And so if they can keep whatever and they'll put it into the treasury in order so that we can forget about this, you know, nonsense of austerity, which will happen. You know, if we need to get the economy rolling in order to lower the unemployment, in order to even keep bumping up the stock market, in order to get the housing market rolling again, which usually lags the last because, you know, people are going to buy cars before they buy houses, of course.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
That's the honest truth. So all this will take time, but if we instead, like in Europe, what they did is, yeah, the austerity. They had decided to not borrow and hold back and basically they had to wear, you know, if we do, we will dry up our funds. So, like, people will then no longer loan on Treasury, right? Rates will go up, and then when will we have the chance to borrow in order to help finance to a good economy again back.
You know, that what you're saying, John, is so true, and it is important that, and I want to restate that, because it is important that people understand two points that you put out there. One specific point is that we can borrow on the cheap, and the people who will own that debt will be the people who are looking for what's known as maintenance of capital. In other words, there are a lot of people know that right now a lot of markets are in danger, so all they want is capital maintenance. In other words, they're not worried about getting a big return on capital. They want capital maintenance. Those people will loan monies right now. That's why the rates are so low. People are scared. So we can borrow a ton of money at under 1%. Work or infrastructure, and the economic activity that will be generated by that would be much better for the economy, for the tax base, et cetera. But most importantly, we have to understand what's going on here. Many people would love what we have, this kind of depressive market, because what the depressive market does to you is several things. It makes you scared. It makes the government do things like what Greece is doing. And by the way, for the blog that I have there, it's in the notes. And rather, it's in the email that we sent and on the website. What I made sure and do is gave the references to where actually shows that we are in fact that Greece is in fact selling off private property to recover some of the money, and what that actually will do to the country as a whole, to the base of the country in the long run. The second thing is people want this because they can buy the country on the cheap, constantly buying the country on the cheap, which is also what's occurring. I was getting some noise from you, John, but let me go ahead to Eric Byler. Eric Byler is the president of Coffee Party and also on the board of directors. Eric, come on in, my friend.
Hey, Gberto.
Great to hear from you. Talk to me.
Well, I did like that line that you had in your blog, profits for the few from taxes by the many. And I do think that that is really the fundamental danger of the republic that we've built. 300 million people pay taxes in one way or another, and it's a huge coffer. It's a huge trough. And so those people who can manipulate their way either into public office, or even better, if they can invisibly manipulate those who make it to public office using their lobbying and their campaign donations and their super PACs and their campaign advertising disguised as news channels, then they can actually redirect money that, let's face it, whether you like it or not, that money is collected for the common good. It's collected so that we can be a more perfect union, a more prosperous country. It's not collected to enrich a few people who can manipulate those dollars toward themselves. And I just, you know, what got me really, really upset and got me into political organizing or making movies about politics instead of romance, which is what I did for 10 years in Hollywood, is that I realized that the Iraq War was basically a boondoggle. It was basically a heist where oil men and war profiteers, some of them holding very high offices, in fact, the two highest offices in the land, basically redirected public money toward their businesses and their buddies' businesses. And I don't know, what is it, $3 trillion for the two wars?
So far.
And yeah, so far. And we're talking about not having enough money to spend on the public good, not having enough money to spend on a more perfect union, not having enough money to invest in our future economic security and prosperity. And it just, you know, I knew it at the time. I didn't know that the Great Recession was coming, which made it even worse. But I just thought, what an incredible waste of money to invade the wrong country and to do it in a way that, you know, they really just so manipulated our fears. And our fears were real and visceral. You know, as I've said before, family members in the Byler family witnessed the attack on the Pentagon and investigated the terrorists who flew out of Boston. It's very close to me. I was terrified. We were all terrified. That our leaders manipulated us into war is bad enough, but that they manipulated us into war for profit, that was the biggest reason why I became interested in politics, why I decided that I was a liberal or whatever, you know, but that
right.
I was against war. And so this whole thing between McCain and Chuck Hagel 2 days ago just reminded me of the whole thing, trying to make Benghazi somehow on par with the memo. I forget what they call those memos that Condoleezza Rice received saying...
Oh, yeah, the daily briefing, yeah.
Yeah, determined to attack within the United States from August 6th of 2001, to try to say that's the worst thing that's ever happened. And, you know, there was nobody at that time who tried to turn that around and use it for political gain, at least not from outside of the administration, to attack the administration. You might say it was used for political gain for the upcoming midterms in 2002. You're either with us or against us. And the march to war was a big part of the campaign. But there certainly wasn't anyone trying to say, therefore, Rumsfeld should resign, or therefore, Rice should resign, or therefore, Cheney and Bush should resign. We pulled together at that time. And I don't know, just the whole thing is just reminding me of why I got mad in the first place and making me mad again.
You know, it is sad. I watched the hearings, and talking about sad, for me it wasn't sad. For me it was more angry. Of course, you know, I temper my anger, but what happened is to see how McCain tried to drive the narrative with Chuck Hagel to say, you see, the surge worked. What I love that Chuck Hagel did, and, you know, people really said how terrible Chuck Hagel was. I'm going to tell you something. If you look at Chuck Hagel's style, he was terrible. But if you look at all the things that Chuck Hagel, many probably would have expected him to go back on and didn't. I loved when he said that it wasn't the specifically the surge that made the change, but that, hey, we paid these guys off to be nice. You know, I don't remember what they call it. The awakening that really was the root cause of the change in Iraq. I mean, I don't think in style he was terrible. In substance, I don't even think it's a wash. I think he held his ground. But, you know, for what we do out here on the media, everything is about the show. When you got the snippets on TV, you got McCain and you got this other guy, the other senator from South Carolina, hammering him, but you didn't really get the reality of what occurred. Now, I'm glad that you got into Chuck Hagel, but beforehand, you were mentioning that you're a filmmaker. And so before I get into this serious stuff, I want to – and he said that – remember, folks, Eric also said that he made romances. When you guys get a chance, you should check out his romance. Charlotte – what is it? Eric, Charlotte
– Charlotte Sometimes.
Charlotte Sometimes. And then tell me a little bit – it's a nice, funny, romantic comedy that – well, not comedy, but romantic what do you call that, Eric?
Drama. It's a romantic drama.
Romantic drama. It was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, folks, tell me a little bit about this project that you're working on, Eric, because there was one particular video that I posted on my blog site with the pre-reconstruction or something like that it's called. Tell me a little
mm-hmm.
bit about that.
Well, Annabelle Park, founder of Coffee Party, has begun a new movie called Story of America. And she's brought me in to play the same role that I played for her on 9500 Liberty. I mean, we were co-directors of that film. And the way we collaborate as co-directors is that she is more of a producer, journalist who sniffs out the story and constructs the plan to find the story. And I just go with the camera and I film what happens. And Annabelle has taken interest in two particular stories so far. Actually, several, but two that I've worked on extensively. One is in Newtown, Connecticut, and we were there for the very first day that the family said that they were ready to come forward and speak on the issue of gun safety. That was about a month after the tragedy. We've also been filming in Virginia and North Carolina, and we plan to go deeper into the South, and what we're investigating is what you mentioned. This historical framework that was provided to us by the head of the NAACP in North Carolina, who is a PhD and a reverend, his name is William Barber, his framework for American history since the Civil War is that we attempted Reconstruction after the Civil War as a way to usher in an era of what he called fusion politics, where blacks and whites governed together for the best interests of the people as a whole. And there were these coalition governments with Lincoln Republicans, populists, and the freedmen, freed slaves, who were electing multiracial city councils and legislatures, sending black men to Congress, and rewriting constitutions in ways that protected voting rights, protected labor rights, all stuff that's very, very much in the progressive vein that we associate with Teddy Roosevelt and later the civil rights movement. Well, unfortunately, as most people know, the Reconstruction era was put to a bloody end by terrorism. We know it as the Ku Klux Klan, but there were also the Red Shirts and the White Citizens Council. They would lynch people, black people, for voting and hang them up with a sign that said, "This person voted." They would stand in mobs outside of the polling place to prevent black people from voting. And they would use terrorism and acts of violence in general to oppress African Americans and also Republicans and populists who were not part of the Democratic Party that really represented the Confederate spirit. And so, of course, once they were able to rewrite the Constitution, they allowed for things like poll taxes and literacy tests, a grandfather clause that said if your grandfather was a slave, then you could not vote. Really, for the next 70 years, there was almost no participation in elections from African Americans in the South until the Civil Rights Movement, which the Reverend William Barber calls the Second Reconstruction. And, of course, that also met a bloody end with the assassinations of the leaders, not just Medgar Evers and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, but also hundreds of other people and the Kennedy brothers. So that kind of fusion politics, blacks and whites governed together. Sorry, there's a dog fight down the hall here. That was put to a bloody end at the end of the 60s. And that the third attempt is what we're living through right now. We're living through a third Reconstruction attempt, and it began with the brand of fusion politics that Barack Obama introduced in his presidential campaign, or you might say that he introduced at the 2004 Democratic Convention. The backlashes are similar, and voting rights is really the common thread
that they try to get at. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now tell me, Eric.
Yeah.
I want to say, how do you plan on integrating these stories, the storytelling that we here at Coffee Party can use in a manner to move our message forward? How do you plan on integrating that? Because I can see a thread where we can use that to actually do that, for our base to actually see that, learn from that, and get some actual real actions from it.
Sure. Well, I think that Annabelle is right in perceiving that the antidote to money and politics and the corruption of our Congress by super PACs and by wealthy billionaires is participation. We need the maximum level of participation from the people so that, A, the political advertising that they purchase has less impact because not all of us sit home and watch Fox News, for instance, but also, B, because if more of us participate, we'll gradually transition into a Congress that's more afraid of being voted out of office than they're afraid of being advertised out of office.
That's the magic. That is the magic. Yeah. And I want to segue right into the project that I spoke about, the 435, because explain what we're trying to do now within the districts, because our goal really has to have, I hate to use the word fear, but in effect I will. We have to make Congress fear the people more so than they fear the money interest.
Right. I think there's a strong connection between the two interests, the sort of regressive economic royalists who prefer the oil industry and the coal industry, because that has made them wealthy, right, in the previous century. And so they're seeking to prevent progress in the energy sector because they're afraid that their profits won't be as large and they might have competitors. So the people like the Koch brothers have a certain interest in stopping progress, right? And in order to do that, they have to prevent participation. They put all their money into manipulating our elections, and then they also fund things like ALEC, you know, the American Legislative Exchange Council, that is seeking to block voting rights, especially targeting minorities and poor people and college students, because those are Democratic constituencies. But I think more importantly than that, that's the kind of fusion politics that would lead to a government of by, for, and the people. And that is, you know, getting back to the quote I really like, that's the danger for people like the Koch brothers and other oligarchs in this country, is that this treasure trove of dollars that were meant for the public good will no longer be able to be diverted to their designer tax codes and their tax subsidies and the ways in which they manipulate regulations in for their profiteering interests.
Absolutely.
Okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Eric. Finish, please.
Well, they fear participation. We want participation. And so the idea is that what we want to do is, in all 435 districts, and of course if we get that, we'll have representations for all the senators as well, we want to have liaisons, people in the Coffee Party network who come forward to be the person who is the direct liaison to the office of their member of Congress, and if they're willing to, also to their senators, or we'll have different people for that. But basically, we want to be covered in as many of these districts as possible. And the relationship, the conversation kind of goes like this. Dear member of Congress, what is your plan to address the issue of money in politics? How are you going to mitigate the damage of the Citizens United decree for unlimited anonymous spending by multinational corporations to influence our elections? And if they respond, then what we'll have is a web page for each of these districts that's part of our website, where that initial person will post what they get back from the member of Congress. And then others in that district who get a chance to read that, they can write as well. And so the conversation continues. And that web page becomes a virtual gathering place for people in that district to have a conversation. Well, what did you think about his response? Why doesn't he have any mention on his website? Well, let's all call him today and ask him to put something on his website, if that's what he really feels he should be afraid. You know, he shouldn't be afraid to say it on his website, you know, because a lot of progressive members of Congress will say, I oppose Citizens United, but they don't write about it on their website. And then eventually what happens is you end up with a network of people within local districts that can go into the office, you know, together, 8, 10, 15 people, to talk about money and politics. And I think that this will, I think that gradually, you know, the work of the Coffee Party and many other good government organizations will start to balance the
balance
equation.
Balance of power. Yeah.
Yeah. Voted out of office or advertised out of office, which is more likely. And then I think the last piece, although it's not part of this program, is I think we have to figure out a way to get people to vote, moderates, normal people, everyday people, to vote in the primaries, because the Republican primaries are unfortunately dominated by Republican media consumers, and therefore we're really at the mercy of whatever Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh decides to broadcast.
But you know, Eric, I think it is our duty actually to encourage. You know, I think we should give people voting suggestions on who or whatever, but let them know policy and let them know what's occurring but then at that same time encourage them that it is their duty to vote to ensure that we actually change. At 6-2, I'm coming to you next, that to ensure that we get changes. There are some things that I want to add here specifically, because whenever we start talking about taxes or whatever and we get off the subject too fast, we leave the door open for people to come in and say, but you know, we understand all that you're saying, but do remember that entitlements are so bad that we just have to do something about it. the reality, folks, is that you are being taxed up the gazoo, the middle class that people claim are paying so little taxes. When you add your taxes up as a percentage, you're paying a lot more than the wealthy. You're paying a lot more than most. And not only that, when we talk about, when I made that statement, profit for the few from taxes by from the many, that's exactly what I mean. Because we are, while we, it may not be in the form of income taxes, it may not be in the form of sales taxes, it's in a whole lot of different forms that we are being taxed. It's in the price of the products that we sell. It's in it's a part, everything that we put back into the economy. In effect, it's going in one direction. We could break down 1 gallon of milk. And if we were to itemize what the costs are for 1 gallon of milk, you would see what the average American is really paying to make a few people wealthy. And that is why 1% of our country controls 35% of the income and wealth, and that is why 10% controls just about 80%. So don't ever let one tell you that somehow we can't afford or we can't tax ourselves out of this problem. The reality is we do need to tax ourselves out of our deficit, because that is how we got the deficit, not taxing appropriately. 620, I'm coming to you next. 620, who do I have the honor of speaking with? Oh, I guess I didn't push the button. 620, you're on.
It's Jack Golding again.
Hey, my friend Jack. I love to hear from you, my friend. What's going on?
I was hearing about talking about money and politics and that stuff. A very simple solution.
I know I'm going to hear your solution, Jack. Let me hear your solution.
Okay. Get it out of there. In other words, just encourage people not to be afraid of special interests.
Thank you, sir. You are absolutely right. What else?
Not only that, okay, I think the whole problem is all these damn loopholes. Do away with all exempt, as I said for the last 2 years, do away with all exemptions, all deductions, all credits, filing
right.
Status, make it as simple as possible. Might be putting H&R Block out of business, but that's, I used to work for them and about 15 years ago when it always was not always on a computer.
Hey, Jack, I've got a project for you.
And you tell me you all got to brainstorm this thing the old-fashioned way. I don't think social media is enough. People tend to ignore emails and stuff like that. I think we need somehow or other to get all over to get the United States, and we need to get the 50-state solution.
Jack, let me stop you there for one reason. Let me stop you there because you said something that is very, very important. You said social media is not enough. And you know what, Jack? You're absolutely right. We need flesh and blood as well. When I say flesh and blood, I mean we need to touch other people. We need to talk to them at the coffee shop. Yes, sir.
The old-fashioned way, brainstorming, like it was done in the 50s and 60s.
You know, Jack, you're right. There are a lot of times that we've forgotten about, even with this social media, we forget about that sometimes. Now, I'm going to just say that as personally, I make sure to engage with other people. I'm sure you know that Eric and Annabelle, they do the same thing, and our other radio hosts. They're actually involved touching people face to face. But what we need is we need all of us here on Coffee Party, and that's what I so much. I'm putting your mic off because you're starting to make some noise. But that's what I love about this project that Frank kind of put together with regards to addressing every single district. Coffee Party folk, we have a call to action, okay? And this call to action is contact us. We want to have somebody in every district. There are 435 congressional districts in this country. We want to know who you are in every district, from Alaska to Hawaii to California to Arkansas to Idaho to Iowa. We want somebody in every single district as the point person. That's not hard. It's not going to be a lot of work. You will have the support. We'll ensure that we try to continuously provide some sort of direction. But remember, this is the people project. So those of you who are listening live, those of you who are listening in the podcast, and do remember that you can subscribe to our iTunes, our podcast on iTunes as well. But for all of you who are listening, if you're hearing it, find out what district you're in. Drop us a line and tell us what district you're in with your email so that we can be in touch with you. We're not going to be asking a hell of a lot from you at all. We just want to have a point person in every district so that if we ask you to make a one-minute call to a congressperson, they know that you are within their district and they owe you something. If I am calling, I'm here in Texas in my congressional district for Ted Poe. I think it's number 2. If I call any other district, they don't have to listen to me. But when I call Ted Poe's office, I am his constituent and he listens to me. May not do what I want him to do, but he knows that I'm building a structure here in Congressional District 2. And let me just say, for our particular district, what we're doing. We have organized with Coffee Party. We've organized with Move to Amend. In fact, today we had our first Move to Amend on the streets in Kingwood with various Coffee Party members that were manning a sign-up sheet just to get in touch with the people so that we can mobilize in this district, which is what we intend to do. And I just want to forewarn all our listeners as well, this is not a Democratic, Republican, Green thing, because guess what? Today there were 7 of us out there. There were 2 Democrats, 2 Greens, and I don't want to call my buddy an anarchist, and one person that I know kind of tends to lean Republican. So the idea here is we want to make a change in this particular district, and we want to start getting Coffee Party members in every district activated. And again, not a lot of work. We just want to have your presence and want to know who you are. With our new website, www.coffeepartyusa.com, signing up there gives us giving us your zip code and postal address, email, or whatever, allows us to really target and have good influence on what's going to happen going forward. Remember, we can't just sit back and complain, because we actually have the power to act. And that is what a group like ours is doing. The other thing is, we'd like you, if you're able to help us, fund us. Eric, myself, and all the other radio folk here, and all the other people doing the grassroots work, we're doing this because we're passionate about our democracy. But our electronics, meaning paying for our station, paying for our database, paying for Nation Builder, that which captures all our information, takes some doing. So we ask you as well to please be, you know, whatever you can to assist us in keeping this going, because we are preparing for what's going to be a very difficult 2014, and we intend to make a difference. We intend in 2014 to make a difference, and this is not going to be partisan. This is going to be, you know, where we all stand. We all stand differently here. I'm a Democrat. We have Republicans here. We have others here. But we intend to get people in office that are actually going to make a difference to the middle class. And Eric, I'm going to ask you to come back in and kind of add a few words to what I said.
Okay. What do you need?
Well, I just wanted you to kind of explain a little bit more about what we're going to do within mm-hmm. these, you know.
Well, if you go to coffeepartyusa.com, the second post down, scroll down, is coffeepartyusa.com/B_A_leader. And it says, who in Congress will lead the fight against corruption? Let's find out. So as people, you know, we're going to be building social media tools to facilitate this, and it's still in the development process. And by the way, if you want to be part of developing it, when you go to this page, sign up to join the network. It says, please join our network. Those are the first three words to help us strategize development of these tools. But we're going to make it very easy for people to contact their members of Congress and then to record the interactions so that there's this collective blog post where people can add new information when they have a new encounter, either by phone or in person or by email or by written letters with their member of Congress or senator. And then we're going to create a list, and I sort of jokingly call it Adelson's List, named after Sherman Adelson, the casino mogul. Makes a lot of his money overseas, by the way, pumped it all into various Senate races and, of course, Mitt Romney's campaign. Before that, he had supported Newt Gingrich. All of his candidates lost, but that doesn't mean that we can all breathe a sigh of relief because, as Sherman Adelson said, if I hadn't spent all of these millions and millions of dollars, it wouldn't have been as close. And if it hadn't been as close, it may well be that we might have a Congress that represents the people's interests rather than their funders. So it does matter. Anyway, Adelson's List will be the list of members of Congress who either refuse to respond to our inquiries or respond that they actually like the corruption that we have now, and they're going to continue to support it by blocking disclosure laws and blocking any kind of campaign finance reform, and of course, not supporting efforts to amend the Constitution to make it clear that corporations are not people, and that political action or super PACs are not speech in the sense that they cannot be regulated at all. There's no form of speech that can't be regulated at all, but I think there are people interested in seeing campaign contributions not regulated at all for obvious reasons.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, did you have some more, Eric? Oh, there's one thing I did want you to make mention of. There's something happening on Monday.
Yeah. So if you click join our network and you do it, let's say, in the next couple hours, then you'll receive an email that invites you to Monday night's what we call Coffee Party Newsroom conference call. And we've been doing it every other Monday night for about, I don't know, 6 months or so. And it's
right.
a team of people that includes Egberto and all the radio show hosts and all the people who have a microphone with our social media tools. And, you know, it was a miracle of internet technology that we ended up having the ability to reach, you know, a million people every week with our social media tools. And we don't feel like we don't feel a sense of ownership of them the way that maybe another organization might say, okay, well, let's use this to try to make money or whatever. We share those tools. And so the team of people who are on our Monday calls are all of the volunteers, including Egberto. That's how I first met him on a call like this, who stepped forward and said, I have something to say. I want my voice to be heard, and I want to help to share in the responsibility of making sure that this incredible social media microphone that the Coffee Party has is used in the interest of the people. So every other Monday night, we get together at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and we talk about the issues, how we are covering them and how we ought to be covering them, how we could do a better job. We talk about things that we expect to come up. And then, of course, we coordinate the radio shows, the Facebook page, Scoop It, Twitter, et cetera. And this year, the new board of directors, which met for the first time a few days ago, has decided they really want to integrate the social media microphone with the actions on the ground and do a really, you know, to do a really good job of reporting on great work that you people are doing in your home communities and basically support that effort to reach the 435
district
liaisons to Congress. Yeah, yeah. So we're going to be talking about that on Monday night. This is all in the planning and strategic stage. So if that's your forte, please join us and contribute to that strategic sort of planning. And if you're someone who has a social media network already and is good at using it, by interlocking it with our social media network, it means that you're going to reach that many more people. And it means that we will too. It's a way of putting all of our media resources together in order to be part of the people's response to Citizens United and the attempt to really put the control of media content into the hands of just a few people.
Excellent, excellent. So please, folks, sign up. Actually, if you get on now, as Eric said, within the next 2 hours, he'll be able to send you out that information within, as far as making or calling in to the show. Eric, I'm here with my television on mute, and there was a rather interesting picture that just came across. You know, we're supposed to talk a little bit about what happened in the gun control hearings this week. But what do you think the press secretary tweeted today? He just tweeted a picture of the president shooting with a gun.
There's a picture of Obama shooting the gun?
There's a picture of Obama shooting, doing target practice. I mean,
really? When was it taken?
Just now. I mean, well, it just got tweeted, but I imagine it's just recent because I don't know if you remember, there was a question sometime that asked if he ever shot a gun. Okay? So now, of course, they tweet a picture with the president with a rifle in it. Well, I don't know if it's a rifle or a shotgun. I am not a gun person who knows guns very well at all. But the reason I brought it up after seeing the picture is that our messaging is so shallow. It's all about only pictures and videos, and I guess I'm guilty too in that I've realized it and started doing more videos and pictures and that sort of thing. But it's sometimes with something as serious as the gun issues right now, it just gets you a bit perturbed, if you will. Just perturbed. Anyhow.
Yeah, I'm surprised that the press office decided to do that. You know, I was just, I messaged Annabelle. I'm in Denver right now, and she is in Maryland, D.C.
Uh-huh.
And I was just texting her this morning that the two stories that we have been documenting in Story of America, and I should tell you the website is storyofamerica.org, and you can see the reconstruction framework by Reverend Barber on the homepage at storyofamerica.org. But the two stories that I've been working on with Annabelle, the Newtown families sort of coming together and deciding that they're going to have a voice in the gun safety debate. And then, of course, this journey back into history as we go through the South and we investigate, you know, basically the echoes of the Civil War and Reconstruction and how it's impacting politics today. And I have a feeling that it may be that in the feature film that we end up making that those two stories connect, even though one is in the Northeast in Connecticut. You know, and it's about a particular family that
right.
has since traveled down to Washington, D.C. To march for gun safety. But there is a connection between it because, you know, it was indeed violence, violence against our government, against the people that began the Civil War. And it was violence against the people in the South that ended the attempt at Reconstruction. Guns were necessary to stop Black people from voting and to terrorize whites and blacks who were working together
right.
to try to govern the South. Of course, guns were necessary to end the civil rights movement. And I do feel that there is a ideological link between those people who really feel as if the Civil War hasn't ended, and that a new insurrection is going to be necessary, or they interpret the Civil War in a way that says that it wasn't actually it wasn't a war to unite or to reunite our states, but it was a war of northern aggression.
And I know.
You know, the government is the northern government, right? It is
right.
Lincoln's Union. It is
right.
The government of by and for the people that Lincoln wanted us to become. And I think that when certain people reach the White House, and I've witnessed it with Clinton and Obama, I don't know much about, you know, what had happened before that. I wasn't alive or aware, but when certain people reach the White House, it does create that sort of sense of paranoia and I think historic rage.
Right. But
and
it's learned, Eric. It's learned because, you know, that's so far gone.
It's not that far gone. I mean, you know, we encounter people who can't say which side of the Civil War they would have fought on.
Yeah.
That they have to think about it for a long time before they'll say. You know, and sometimes they say the South, you know, so it's still echoing. It's really in the scope of history, 150 years is not that long.
Right.
And the last thing I'll say on this is that any time that there are deep passions, marketeers know how to exploit them.
Right.
And make money off of them.
Exactly.
Okay? So we have deep passions about many things. We all want to be thin. We all want to have clean complexions. We all want the people of the opposite sex, if we're heterosexual, to like us. And marketeers know how to exploit that anxiety and that passion that we have to be liked and to be accepted.
They also
know how to exploit negative emotions like hatred or resentment over the outcome of an election, which is really the impetus of the Civil War, let's face it. Resentment over the expanding of the suffrage to people of color, a resentment over fusion politics. There are marketeers who exploit that resentment, exploit those fears. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the NRA is such a marketeer, that the NRA makes money for its clients, the gun manufacturing industry, by exploiting resentment over the outcome of the Civil War and the Lincoln Republican government that we have maintained and tried to perfect ever since. And so all of this attempt to block people from voting, to keep African Americans and people of color and young people from voting, all of these attempts to flood our political process with the money of oligarchs, and the struggle we're having over gun safety are all really connected to our country's first sin, slavery.
Yes, absolutely.
And the bloody way in which we've tried to resolve.
Absolutely.
The contradiction.
I'm coming to 401 next, but Eric, I don't know if you saw, I did a blog that I normally would not have put out, but I did because it's a short video of an Arkansas state senator and how he used division politics on the crowd. And it's one of the reasons that I posted it there, because it is amazing what you're saying about when you mentioned about the Civil War, and I said it's so long ago, and then I said it's a learned behavior, because we have these people that are constantly teaching these ills to people. And
they're marketeers.
Yes, exactly.
They're profiteers. They're politicians who are exploiting fears that, you know, they are there, right? You know, we all want to be thinner, right? But we don't run out and buy the next diet drug until we see that commercial over and over and over again.
There you go.
Well, we all have, let's face it, we all have a preference, at least innately, to be among people with whom we are familiar, who look like us, who think like us, who have our culture. We all sort of have that preference. And then we get over it, most of us, and we come to actually appreciate and crave a diverse and dynamic society.
I want to change the word preference to a comfort. We all have a comfort. Yeah.
Sure. But then there are marketeers, there are profiteers, there are politicians who are always pumping our televisions and our radios and now our computer screens with this notion that we are somehow at war with ourselves, and that somehow white hegemony is under threat, and that really this should be a race war, right? I mean, isn't that what the immigration issue was?
Exactly.
It was to try to create a white versus Hispanic divide. And sure, they knew they'd never get the Hispanic vote again, but if they could get 80% of the white vote instead of 60% of the white vote by creating a basically hysteria over immigration, then they could have held on to the White House in 08, and everything would have been just fine, and the money of the people would have continued to flow to the pockets of the few.
There you go. Okay.
And now they found it didn't work, you know? And they're trying to backtrack. Yeah.
Stay with me, Eric, but I need to bring 401 in. 401, you're going hot. 401, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hi, Egberto. It's Linda in Rhode Island. How are you?
Linda in Rhode Island. How are you doing, Linda?
I'm doing good. I just wanted to comment on that picture that you just saw. Actually, I think it's the White House's way of marketing, in a way. I like the picture. It's a picture of, I don't know, it must have been during the summer. It's the president skeet shooting at Camp David.
Right.
And I think it's a message to let the other side that disagrees with the, I don't believe it as gun control. I believe this is a public health issue right now. And I think it's just a way of them saying, we're not going to take your guns away. We're not going to take your Second Amendment rights away. We just want to use some common sense laws. Or precautions. You know, we have to stop preventing these shootings. We have to go use prevention.
No, I agree with you. What got me with the picture? Like I said, I'm watching it in silence. So you were probably able to listen to how it was released and that sort of thing. I just looked at the picture and said, oh, there he goes having to appease. But I understand what you're saying, and what you're saying is absolutely true. I mean, it shows, in retrospect, exactly what you're saying, that it shows that, okay, we're not trying to take your guns away. Come on, after all, the president is shooting as well. So, you know, we're not trying to get your guns away. And for that guy in Appalachia who has been programmed to believe that this big bad president is out to get you, I do see your point, Linda. I think you make a lot of sense with that point.
Okay, thanks.
Yes, absolutely. Now, let me go ahead and stay with me, Linda. I'm going to bring in 832. 832, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
This is Pankaj. Hey, what's up, Egberto?
Hey, Pankaj, how you doing, my friend?
Good. Did you look at that message that I sent you? What do you think of it?
Let me tell you, while I'm talking, I can't read a long, detailed message, so why don't you kind of tell me what you were saying. I am looking at it right now. So talk to me a little bit about it. Actually, talk to our audience a little bit about what you're saying.
Well, let me read it out. It's actually easy, in other words. You mentioned one time a pretty interesting subject, and I shared it with Eric, too. Annabelle, too. I know Eric's there. I think he would like anything that I'd share. And,
go for it, my friend.
Yeah, it says, hello, Egberto. What do you think about this idea of growing the coffee party and calling it the Reform Party? How about merging and putting together as many of the progressive and grassroots organizations and coming up with a party platform like term limits and overturning Citizens United like money in politics? And the list goes on and on other issues. How about universal registration and background checks like of guns, for instance? That could be a position. Like we are the 99% reaching out to them, Occupy Wall Street, the 13 million member AFL-CIO, you got the Service Employees International Union, environmental groups, and any other grassroots groups and coalitions you can think of merging into one common agenda, and that is to form a national third party. And there is nothing that all the big money in the world can buy, or the lobbyists and Washington money. So what do you think?
Okay, I want to first take a short crack at it, then I want to pass it to Eric. But here's what I want to say. There's one thing. Personally, I would rather be a movement than a party, because there are a lot of things that even here in Coffee Party that we can work together on that I think, but there are differences in certain policies that we that different people in this group believe. So I think our group, just like our group, is probably intended to work together on common ground. There are issues we're going to differ on, and I don't think organizing in a political structure, in a party structure, would allow us to have these types of differences. But let me throw it at Eric to see what he thinks. Are you there, Eric?
Well, thank you very much for the thoughtful ideas. I think that the issues that we organize around that you suggest are right on target. It is true, and it will always be true, that party politics requires vast sums of money. And I personally take pride in the fact that we don't have to go to the oligarchs for money, that we don't need to... Basically, what we do is we get small donations from everyday Americans, and we pool that money in order to act in the common good. And because it's money that's pooled from many sources, there's no one that gets to tell us what platform we need to stand on. If we were to become a political party, it would require the kind of massive organizing that political parties, you know, naturally do. It's not unnatural. It's natural that when you need to marshal vast numbers of voters. And so,
can I also say
even
something
though
else?
What?
Can I also say something else? Yeah. Here's the reason why I actually said, I think I agree. Movement is a good idea, you know, if it's not party. But the reason I brought up this idea, like including and merging with other groups, let's say, or like and forming coalitions, is because you don't have, like, let's say, like this gun control march that is taking place, like, in Washington, D.C. Let's say, like, there was only, like, 5,000 of them. Well, if you merge and you put as many coalitions together, it'll be that much more in terms of number. And the numbers is the key to defeating the lobbyists.
You know, you're very, Pankaj, you're right about that. And I think that is one of the reasons that Coffee Party, Move to Mend, Citizens.org, and so forth actually do cooperate together to do certain things. But I tell you something else, okay? I am a member of the Coffee Party, but I am also a Democrat. What I try to do is within the Democratic Party is to have some sort of an influence, however small, to move the types of policies that here at Coffee Party we know are beneficial to everyone, to the entire middle class. Now, we also have within Coffee Party Republicans, and I won't make any names, that I would hope, and I listened to him several times, I would assume that within his party, he would be attempting to do the same. Look, I strongly believe that we have to have different ideas. We have to have competing ideas, and that competing ideas give, in general, the best results because it prevents you from being lazy. Eric, you want to add to that?
Well, I would just say that if, for some reason, we had the kind of money that it takes to run candidates across the United States, or anything close to it, I would rather invest it in the people themselves and making sure that the voices of the people are more prevalent in the national conversations that we have. In other words, I would put it toward the same stuff we're already doing on a shoestring, because I think that the revolutionary change that we're going through right now is that the tools of communication are becoming available to everyone, and we're not just stuck in living rooms sitting here watching somebody else's media products, which, you know, increasingly in the last 30 years were made by just a few mega corporations. The age of social media, the age of network intelligence, that's what's going to turn this around. And I think that Egberto, tries to work within the Democratic Party. Michael Charney tries to work within the Republican Party. And Annabelle and I really try to focus on bringing out those voices who haven't felt comfortable really associating with any party yet. And what we're trying to say is you don't have to feel like you have no voice. You have a collective voice with organizations like ours and others who don't feel that the party system is the only way to participate.
That is excellent. Now, folks, the telephone number is 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495, and I am going to call on Tyler Francois. Tyler, how you doing, my friend?
Actually, this is Evan Egberto. How are you doing?
Hey, Evan, how come it came up with that number? Talk to me, my brother.
I think Tyler was on my computer not too long ago. In fact, we were at a Skype session not too long ago.
Okay,
yeah, my question would be, what do you plan on doing when the Democrats continually block third parties from debates? Like, take for instance, Jill Stein, Obama simply wouldn't engage her. So you talk about things like the open...
Hold on, Evan. You're breaking up again. So start over for me, please, because I want to hear the complete question. I know you come with some very difficult questions, so let me have it.
Sure. So if you look at the Democrats, they're quite clearly trying to keep third parties out of the national debates. And my question to you would be, as a Democrat, how do you plan on bringing in those ideas if at every level, including just simply debating those ideas, they're actually kept out? There's a gatekeeper in there, and quite frankly, Jill Stein wasn't even invited, despite the fact that 500,000 Americans found her interesting enough to go out and vote for her.
You know something, Evan, I'm not going to argue that point with you because you're absolutely right. Okay? Now, that said, you're saying, what is Egberto specifically going to do about it? Well, you shouldn't have to ask that question. And why shouldn't you have to ask that question? Because if you would remember, in our local elections here, under the auspices of the Community College with Dr. Theis, we actually ensured that everybody got a hearing, including Jill Stein. Now, I couldn't do it as one person on a national or state level, but we have to start from somewhere. We have to get people within the party who are enlightened enough so that they can say, hey, you know, Evan, I know we are from different parties or we are different or whatever, but let's talk about how do we get people engaged. So that's my answer to you. My answer is, I am going to try my best, and nothing is going to be easy, but I am going to try my best to get everybody engaged, because that's what I believe a real democracy must be.
So, I mean, do you believe that a real party should be one that's accepting to new ideas?
Absolutely. Yes, you know that. Yes,
and
sir.
And do you have any criteria whatsoever that the Democratic Party is accepting new ideas? Are they changing in any way, shape, or form?
Okay, you're breaking up a bit, but I think what you're asking is if I believe the Democratic idea is open to new ideas. I think there are a lot of old fogies in the Democratic Party. I think they're called Blue Dogs and others that are intent on maintaining the status quo. I think that is something that probably is evident in every party, including the Green Party, because I went to a convention, a retreat actually in Orlando. And I had a long talk with a previous Green Party person who then jumped over to the Justice Party because in her particular area, the Green Party had become just an obstructionist. What would be the word be? What word I'm trying to look for. It became just as similar in their ideological behavior to the Democratic Party with respect to how it treated different ideas. So I think if you listen to some of the things that Eric said before, when Eric said he and Annabelle works on attempting for people who think they do not have a voice within the party system to be able to articulate what they want to articulate, again, that falls into the same domain. The party system can be difficult and constraining. One of the reasons I work with the party system and outside of the party system is that I think that is the best way to function. Yes, you're constrained within the party, but outside the party, a Move to Amend, a Coffee Party USA, and these other organizations give you that ability to work on, just like a virus must be attacked from several different directions, it gives you that ability to have more impact in for people where they are and not you trying to necessarily bring them in. I can work with Democrats. I can work with non-Democrats, as you well know as well.
But would you say that one principle the party operates on is openness and conversation?
I'm sorry, repeat please.
Would you say that the one thing that the Coffee Party operates on is openness and conversation?
Well, to put it bluntly, even the Coffee Party at times could have had some problems with open conversation. Let's be frank about that. And that is because learning to communicate is a long process. Learning how to accept different ideas is a long process. Learning how to be able to be tolerant of different ideas is a long process. It's something that you have to learn, but it's something that you have to first accept as a deficiency within oneself. I accept that I am deficient at times in listening. Over the years, I have much improved that. And I want to tell you one thing. Believe it or not, one of the improvement came from listening. When I joined the Coffee Party, it came originally from listening to Annabelle's video. And the reason when I listened to that video, it was during a crazy time in the dialogue. And it was just something that spoke to you then. There are a lot of things that have to speak to you in a moment. And it may not have a validity before, it may not have a validity after, but in the moment, it was the right thing to be heard. And that is what happened. That is what got me into not just being a lefty, but a lefty who was willing to cooperate and listen to not only the righties, but everybody else. And that's why if you take a look at the people that call into this show, everybody gets a hearing. Sometimes they change minds, sometimes they don't. But everybody, including you, Evan, you know I know you very well.
Sure. I think that you were talking about earlier, you know, different concepts, and one of them that you keep bringing to the Coffee Party is this openness to conversation and dialogue, and it seems that if you have two political parties that are clearly not open to conversation and not open to dialogue, then maybe their stance on political parties should be not to support them on the simple basis that they're not open to other people's ideas.
And you know what? Guess what? And that's how you feel, right? And I think that's a valid way to feel. I mean, if that's the way you feel would solve the problem in based on how your mind works, that is fine. Then operate that way. I don't. I believe that I have to try to change from within and from without. In the same token, I will continue to work with you who wants to change from without. I will never give up on working with you in that aspect. But likewise, you will never be able to convince me not to try other avenues as well. That is where I'm at right now. I will try them all.
Fair enough. But I'll let you back to your show, Egberto.
Thank you for calling in, buddy. I hope you stay and listen some. And let me see if John from Jersey, who just recycled, want to say something. John, buddy, come on in, brother.
Hey, how you been? Let's see. I saw recently 41, which was a documentary thing on President George Bush, you know, number one.
Yes, sir.
The father, okay? And, you know, of course he knows he's going to have a Democratic contender, which, of course, was Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
The thing where he was very disappointed was his other Republican contender, who wasn't into the primaries, but challenged him into the national election, which was Ross Perot. And
right.
He was ticked that he lost the election, and he knows, in his belief, and I do believe too, yeah, he lost the election because of Ross Perot, sure.
You mean Bush won, right? Yeah.
Bush won, lost the election because of Perot. I mean, I voted for, but like, I'm a Democratic voter, and I voted Perot. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, as a Republican, you would say that because because Perot himself was a Republican, so you would normally say that. I mean, to say with absolute clear defined terms that was the absolute that caused that, I don't know.
Right. Well, look, I think we have to take a look at a few things here. The reality is there are a lot of good lights shining for Clinton when he won in both races, actually, because third parties were strong enough. We were still enthralled with the false sense of what Reaganomics really was back in the time that Clinton was running, and that's how the DLC actually made some impact. But the DLC impact really was not enough on its own. I think you are correct that Ross Perot running the first time around, and I don't remember who was the third party, several third party people that actually got a substantial amount of votes. The second time around, we have to realize that when we talk about mandates of presidents and so forth, we have to realize that if you take a look at the numbers, the current president is the only president, I think, since Reagan, actually, that really can say I have a much more than 50% mandate in this country based on the election. And it's not only that it occurred in a popular vote for the president, but it occurred in a popular vote for the Congress. It occurred in a popular vote for the Senate.
The first since Eisenhower.
There you go. So, I mean, this is what, in a country as polarized as we are, this is the American population actually saying, and I'm not going to even necessarily talk about the president here. I'm going to talk about the population saying that we looked at different things. And we are really more into what I don't want to upset any of my conservative listeners, but America really attempts at being a lot more progressive than the media or anyone else would advertise them as. Because if you look at the policies they want, Americans, if you look at what Americans want as policies, they are in fact in line with a lot of progressive values. Now, Evan called in, and Evan has some very good statements when he hits the Democratic Party. And sometimes it's difficult to address. I was very happy with the tone that Evan came to the discussion. And actually, there are a couple of things it would be great if he called back on. But he actually has some very, very strong gripes with our political system, both on the left and the right, but he's more upset at the left because he believes the left is really a lot of times deceptive to the values of what America really wants. And a lot of times he's correct, you know. But how do you change that? That is where go ahead, I'm sorry.
There's something I want to say, though.
Please do.
You know, they could say that on both sides. There's no doubt you could say that on both sides, and but it also depends on what issue. You know, so you know, let's be frank on that. It's on what issue. Now,
you're right.
Now, I want to go back and keep hitting a thing that I've talked about a few times with you, and on your show, which I think is important because it's being talked about. Okay, now, and. You know, and it's history, too. Again, history, right? Why would this country, the founders, you know, those of the, you know, the Washingtons, the this, the that, the Hamiltons, the Madison, and them, okay? Why would they create a constitution now, then, a constitution for the fact and a country for which they wanted it to be, you know, have insurrection against it? Why would they want to, you know, They didn't. You know, yeah. The thing with the Second Amendment and that kind of thing, that this crazy LaPierre talk, that it is, you know, oh, to defend just against King George. And,
right.
And yeah, and the whole thing and the protection of the state in case the state went crazy and awry against us, okay? Why would they create the Constitution and such and set up for a government that they desired to go against themselves, for which they were in power? That's insane talk.
It's not only insane talk. I mean, it's childish, and the reason it is childish is simple. And it gets you rather upset to watch how there is a sect in America that can fall for that sort of thing. And what I mean by that is this: first of all, I don't care. You could give every American a bazooka. Can they go against an F-14? an F-16, an F-18? No, they can't. So this it,
they,
it,
they
it,
couldn't they couldn't mobilize against an army.
It makes, so I mean it, makes,
it talks about it, you gotta be you know, people are gonna be at home with food. How many people are gonna do to go and mobilize at a certain point in time and mobilize correctly, you know, at a certain point in time?
And that is why I wish when LaPierre was in front of that the senators that somebody said, now, how is a shotgun or Uzi or whatever it is? I'm not a gun person, as you can tell by now. But how can any of that fight against the U.S. government if we really wanted to? And then, look, what I tried to – what we have to do first – wait, John. Hold on, John. This is important here. We have to be the people, putting the sense back into we, the people, is what is the government. I know I said is. I'm grammatical. The government is the people, okay? It is important for you to gravitate towards that. For the longest time, it is important for a plutocrat, it is important for you to look at that government as some other. And the reason why you must look at that government as some other, because if you look at the government as what it really is, when the government regulate a company, you would be saying, I am regulating Exxon to ensure it doesn't pollute. I am regulating Monsanto to ensure that it doesn't have genetically modified seeds that a farmer can no longer own his own seeds. When you say government regulate, it is we, the people, regulating for the better good of we, the people. The only way for you to go against that is if you can have the plutocracy tell you that the government is some other that you are not a part of. Mm-hmm. And when Reagan went out there and gave that speech, government is the problem. In effect, he was saying, America, middle class America, you are the problem. And until we internalize that, we would continue to get hit, continue to be pilfered by the plutocracy, because what it's doing, it's dividing you against yourself. Mm-hmm. And that is what, you know, so whenever we are preaching things, whenever we are talking to people, and people talk about the government this, a lot of times what people try to do is appease them. Yeah, we know the government is inefficient, X, Y, Z. I no longer do that. I tell, whenever somebody tells me the government is bad, I remind them, if the government is bad, it is your doing. Because you are the one who make the government. You must take responsibility for that government. So when you have a right-winger telling you how bad the government is, let him know it's his fault. When you have, I mean, it is important because we have to take responsibility. When Coffee Party says now that we are going to go out there and put people in every district, that's what we're talking about. We are now going to take control. So if government is bad, then it is we who are bad.
Right. Well, you know, here... the thing was, again, I keep saying, and I mentioned Shays' Rebellion was why we went towards the Constitution, right? But additionally, again, controlling slaves, the Indians, all that stuff, okay? It was to make sure that these people felt safe, the elite, like Washington and all these others. And, you know, these people wanted to feel safe, okay? They weren't God idols. They weren't, as people want to make them out to be.
Oh, my God, John, you said, I can't believe you said that. Do you know what that would do to you in certain circles? I'm so glad you said that, though. That is important for people to know. Whenever we talk, what would the founding fathers believe? What would the founding fathers think if we change X, Y, Z? I mean, if you were a Christian or a Muslim or whatever, that is almost going on to idolatry by the
it
way
is.
Some of these people talk.
It because, is. I mean, Mount Rushmore, that's idolatry.
Yeah,
Sarah Palin talks about the founding fathers, that's idolatry.
But you know, you bring up something that I think is something that I should probably add to some of my narratives, because people talk about the Constitution as almost an unchanging document. The one good thing I think, the major good thing I think the founding fathers did was to make an expandable Constitution, an elastic Constitution, a Constitution that has a peaceful mechanism for change. But the mere fact that it has a peaceful mechanism to change was the understanding of many that, in fact, it needed to be changed at some time. But we have some of these absolutists.
2013, and this is segment three.
What's that, thank it?
Now, hey, talk.
Are you, oh, I think Pinkett was probably, I left his mic open, and I think he was probably talking to somebody else.
Okay.
Anyway, but John, the mere fact that that was done just proves that even at their level, even at their elitist level, the level that didn't allow women to vote, the level that called me three-fifths of a man, even at that level, they left the doors open for change, which I think was a good thing.
And accordingly for them, these people like Washington and others, okay, who were very wealthy people, okay, who had to protect themselves, okay, they, you know, supplied for the army themselves and then sometimes reneged on those deals, okay.
Right.
They reneged on deals that, like, Washington reneged, okay. He reneged on saying we're going to pay for stuff for people who fought for the Revolutionary War.
Not only that, they reneged on things for the Native Americans. They threw Native Americans on reserve. I mean, we could go through all. I'm not necessary right now, but John, let me put 518.
One quick one.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. So here, in regards to appeasing their own beliefs, okay. So you had the Shays Rebellion. Yes, they had whatever to where they went and redrafted the to where they now have a constitution instead of the old form of government. Okay, so they have this new constitution. They threw out the old government. Okay, now they then, because they also afterwards was also a thing called the Whiskey Rebellion. Okay, made to where they understood that what according to their world at that time was correct. And then in 1807, besides what was in the Constitution about treason and all that stuff, okay, like I said, it wasn't for all these glorious reasons for, you know, for giving us rights. It was for if you were to cause treasonous acts against the government, you were to be put down, correct?
Right.
Okay, in 1807, they have the Insurrection Act or whatever in 1807. So it was to put down rebellions. It was
against
to put down
the government. Yes.
Against the government. And look, let me go one more notion on this, okay? Besides the 99%ers, okay, which they put that down, okay? That, you know, in the sense of the current day government felt very threatened. There's no doubt about it, okay?
Absolutely.
But one last one.
Go ahead.
Had Martin Luther King, instead of being for peace, had said that he was against certain things against the government, well, you know, the white population would have turned against him, and they would have like agreed to go against him more. So like more whites would have never been on board. You know, there was a division, but there would have been so many more that would have went against him. He knew that he couldn't be treasonous.
You hit that on the money, and you're correct. Martin Luther King had some navigating to do, and that's why he gets the kudos he gets, because he navigated a very difficult stance. But let me bring 518 in. 518, who do I have the honor of speaking with? 518? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hit your number. Now, that's my fault. 518, you're hot.
Egberto, Joe Pomponio over here.
Senor Pomponio, how are you doing, sir?
Another good show today, man.
Thank you very much. Look, you guys make the show. You know that, right? And by the way, beforehand, let me just tell people. Folks, the number is 646-929-2495. I was going off so much into all this discussion that I forgot to keep telling you. 646-929-2495. Joe Pomponio is the last one on the line so far, so it's wide open for you. Give me a call. I want to hear your point of view. Joe Pomponio, talk to me.
Okay, Egberto. John got me going really good with this. first of all, I do agree with him about the bondholders, the fact that our economy basically is owned by mainly Americans buying bonds. I could jump back to earlier meetings we had where I believe it was Eric had brought up that what they do is they got us in a financial jam. They got in trouble. We bailed them out with our money, right? And they got bonds on top of that to facilitate the bailouts. So they're making money on both ends. We're giving it to them. And in turn, they're buying the bonds and making the money off that. So, you know, I mean, we're catching pretty bad, you know, in that area. Where I have a slight disagreement with John. I understand his perception. I call it a perception. I'm not a Federalist Paper expert, but I do have empathy. And if I had just come out of a war and I had a new nation, okay, and I wanted it to stand, the actions I would take would be for that nation. I appreciate that Washington was a president and these people were in charge. I don't think it was in their minds that it was really self-preservation. It was preservation of things that people die for. And that, look, you know, when you break the law has to respond. Now, again, I understand the perception. It may be right. I wasn't around then. I just, in my heart of hearts, if you put me in that situation with a new nation, trying to establish justice to show the rest of the citizenry that what your government says it means, you're going to have to resort to that. Now, let me try and bring that like forward to today with regard to the gun safety issues. I've been following this as well as a few other things rather closely. And what I'm encountering, by and large, is, and I mean this in the best sense I can state it, there is a minority, a very small minority of individuals out there that feel they have to have the power to take out law enforcement, military, the government itself for acts of tyranny. Now, they're a really minuscule part of gun owners, but they are there. What I glean from some of the conversations in my social networking I'm picking up are things that have some type of basis, okay? The environment could collapse. Thereby, there'd be no help. They have religious understandings that they're in an end time, okay? They just don't like the present president of the United States. I think that mainly is a pigmentation problem. and trying, by and large with guns, with the Second Amendment, people generally, I'm a gun owner, okay, and generally most of the gun owners don't feel that an out-and-out ban on assault weapons should be the way to go, all right? You could mitigate that if, you pass safety laws. For instance, you must remove the action from the weapon when in transit, or it must be stored in a locker at the range you want to use it at. There's a number of them. By the way, an action is a firing mechanism that fires a bullet. If you take that out, all you have left is a baseball bat.
Right.
I can myself meet them halfway. Universal background checks, I don't know anybody against that, unless you happen to be a gun runner. Because if you're running guns, you can make a fortune, especially in this.
Well, LaPierre is against it.
Yeah, makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Yes.
I saw a piece online. I don't know how true it is about him, but he apparently had some problems with his mental health which would make them ineligible to have a weapon if there were background checks. Again, I saw it online. I don't know per fact one way or the other.
We better not put it out there because, you know, we suddenly become the way Fox News does it. You know what they do? They'll go out and say, well, we read in the papers or that XYZ, and then you go put it out there. So I'm going to leave that one alone.
Yeah, I would too. But there's a lot of agreement on things. And I guess the essence of law, okay, and governing is that if you pass laws, you have to enforce it. To what degree, that's why you have courts, okay? Now, if I could touch on what Eric was saying with regard to organization and our congressional districts, the thought that came to my mind is a person would be a citizen observer. I played with something like that in my mind. In effect, I have a congressional representative. He's on my speed dial. I mean, I'm kind of in touch with him quite a bit. My two senators, not so much. But my congressional district, I do keep in touch with him on.
You know, Joe Pomponio, hold on a second. I want to address that because you're doing something that I have not, that I think you've just turned me on to doing. You just said you have your congressman, not your senator, but your immediate people on speed dial. Wow, I don't have that. I like that idea. You hear that, folks? Let's have a little project here, buddies. In your cell phone, make sure your congressman in your district, you have it on your cell phone so that if you see something that you want to address, instead of waiting until you go home to look him up, he's on your speed dial. And call that office right away. Let's make that be a new coffee party paradigm. Put your congressman's name, the federal congressman, in your speed dial so that you can be in touch with him right away. When you see something on TV, you see him mess up on MSNBC, CNN, or Fox News, you can call right away and say, hey, I didn't like that interview that you give. Joe, I mean that is a great thing to have. I'm going to pick up on that too. Thank you for that that bit of advice, buddy.
Well, it you're going to find it handy. Most people I know are afraid to call, which I find. I got to admit, first time I called, I was a little nervous. I mean, what do you say? Now you realize you're not going to get him on the phone. You're going to get one of his assistants, and I usually try to call on hot items. Like you just mentioned, something on the news that is going to be coming for a vote or might be in litigation going through.
Or if he lies when he actually said something, let it be known that you're watching and that you're going to actually call him out in social media that he actually lied.
Well, I haven't really encountered that with him yet. My main problem with government, tantamount to anything else, is standard of living jobs. We're getting jobs. That's good. We're not getting standard of living jobs. And the standard of living for the middle class is going backwards, not forward. Okay? And I voiced this. As a matter of fact, he had a meeting this past Friday. He emailed me. It was in a meeting that I went to. And, you can sit down, you can talk to these people. And, he's one man out of 437.
Right.
I can't expect miracles from him. But, at least you let them know. And I'm quite sure if those concerns add up, which goes back to what Eric was saying, if this can be organized to where there's more than one, okay, and we're going in with a list of, let's not call them grievances, but concerns, okay, I think it would carry more weight than like me going in or you yourself going in by yourself. And, I'm going to be going to the website, I'll register, and, if we can get people in my district or even neighboring districts, all right, that are interested in it, it might add up to something.
Let me tell you, Joe, yes, you're right. Exactly you know, implementing our 435 program. Now, also, I love, I'm back to that speed dial thing again, because I think that is more important than, you know, if folks have that, if we all keep our cell phones close by, and if we have that number to that main guy, we, whenever we need to, we can call, we can change their behavior. That's a good one. Stay with me, Joe, because I have 404 on, and I want to, I'm going to bring them in, and we'll continue. 404, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hey, guys, Robert Rodrigo in Atlanta. How you doing?
Señor Rodrigo, how are you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm okay. It's been a long week politically for me. I am a little wore out.
It was tough, wasn't it?
It was tough. You know, you guys, of course, normal wonderful stuff. I have to tell you real quick before I make my comments about the show. The last couple of days, I have had the wonderful lack of pleasure to see a video, for example. A friend of mine posted a video, and actually I'm going to send it to you guys. I'm not going to post it on anything, but I'm going to send it to you guys. I'm going to send it to Ms. Rude, who was on one of the shows last week. That was, you may have seen it, it's by a lieutenant colonel who says he's an ex-Green Beret, who talks about all the bad things that are going on and how we are turning into a Marxist country. And I'm telling you, by the time I got two-thirds through it, my stomach was a knot. So, you know, and a very, very good friend of mine was the one that posted it and talked about how they believe this is happening in our country. And it just made me realize how bad we are with bad information and polarization again. And this was after the, I don't know if you guys saw, the Arkansas state senator that
went
off.
I posted that today, yes.
And I'm like, are you kidding me? So it's been a little tough week dealing with that and talking about it, because, you know, that if there's anything that will get me uncivil, it's that. And, of course, I don't do that, so I've been biting my tongue a lot. But, you know, I've been listening to everything you guys have been saying, of course, and great ideas. But, you know, it makes me come around full circle again like I always do. You realize all these things that are necessary to do or smart to do or possible to do, if the money was eliminated from the equation in our politics and in our way our government is run, none of this would be necessary.
You're absolutely right.
The voting would be true. The voting would, you know, we would actually be, everybody would be on an even playing field. They would have to go to another source, which would probably be the media, which they already do it with, to try and get false messages out there, however they do it. But they certainly wouldn't have their hands in all these guys' pockets. You know, for example, our president, who I support more than a lot of other choices I have, for example, I was very disappointed, as I'm sure a lot of people are, in his choice to run the SEC, because she's an insider anyway.
Yes, she is.
And to me, it was a horrible. Basically, I felt betrayed again. And of course, none of those prosecutions have happened anyway. You know, they should have long happened long time ago. And so it's like, okay, let's pile on a bad thing. It's a horrible choice. You know, and unless the whole policy is a complete turnaround, because she certainly would know how to do it. She knows where all the skeletons are. But we know that's not going to happen because she knows where all the skeletons are.
Well, let me stop you there. Robert, I want to stop you there for one reason only. Matt Taibbi did a piece on it today. I haven't read it yet, but Dr. Seitz gave me a link to it, and he said you must read it because this appointment was a terrible appointment. Now, you added a side to that where you said, well, you know, she knows where the skull is, but you doubt if she's going to go dig the skulls up so that we actually clean the things up. Here's my answer to that, 435. She won't find any skulls if she doesn't think she has to find any skulls. However,
sure,
if we do our job as we are trying to do, then we'll get some of those skulls dug up, because that is what... You know, let me tell you what I really don't want to hear from any of our coffee party members, and that is any sort of, and I'm not speaking about you specifically, I'm speaking in general, that it's not a defeatist attitude, but it's an attitude that says, oh, well, things, the more things change, the more they stay the same. I don't want to hear that.
I'm totally with you on that. Absolutely.
I know you are.
And I didn't mean it that way at all. And you're right. I'm glad you pointed that out. it's completely unnecessary. We need to continue, and that's the thing. I mean, the fact that there is money in it and everything, that's why we're here having these discussions and going after it. It's just amazing that it really is that simple. And that is, you know, going back to the Anti-Corruption Act and the move to amend, all that stuff, that really, we eliminate the money, we solve what we want to solve.
Right.
And we have real elections, and we have a chance to put the people in there that are going to represent us. I challenge everybody all the time, give me the names of 10 people in Washington that you believe are truly working for us. I don't think it can be done.
I keep saying that
over and over again. You cannot do it. And if you can, probably half of them are just voted in and we don't know yet.
Well, you see what happens? A lot of these guys and go in with the best of intentions. A lot of people go into politics with the best of intentions, and then they finally figure out, oh, my God, it is so hard to do. And then they feel, well, you know what? They're irrelevant, so might as well join the club.
I don't even know if I believe that anymore, considering how much money is on the front end now. Because you know deals are being made constantly in order to get people to fund you, whatever you make. I mean, that has been going on for how long? And just it's going on at a ridiculous level now. So
right.
I don't even know if I believe that anymore, except for maybe a few circumstances. Because as soon as you announce your name, or as soon as you go after something, here comes the war chest down the street to see you, to see who can get the deal.
Well, that's true. That's true.
It's amazing.
That is why, but look, that's what we're doing, Robert. That is what we're doing. And I'm going to tell you something. Personally, this is just me. I never lose hope. I am always moving forward. I am willing to fall on my face 100,000 times as long as I am able to get back up again. And the reason why is that none of these things are going to be easy, but they're going to be essential, because if we don't get it done, it's over. And you know what? I have a kid, and I want a better life for my kid. And you go ahead and you tell everybody who have kids, everybody who have siblings, cousins, nephews, whatever. Then you see, you know what? We can't fail. We got to keep on moving this thing forward. You're going to fall back, and things are going to go bad. And it's for those of us who are strong enough to say, you know, yeah, we fell on our face, but don't let, you know, I mean, you always need to have the group of people who can give the others a pat on the back and say, okay, get your butt up, let's keep moving. And that's what
Absolutely.
You're there for. That's what everybody here is. That's why we're here. That's what we do. And, you know, as a group, Coffee Party can be our own little mentoring group, you know, to take care of doing that. Because, like I said, I don't intend to give up. I've been working a lot of this occurring. I mean, I remember in the good old Bush days, you know, I had a website. It was called politicaltruths.info. And at that time, it was registered with, I don't remember the people I had it registered with, but it's the one that hid all the things that you, it hid most of what they could use to find who was behind the website. And I did that because at that point, I was supremely critical of the war, the Bush administration, and all that kind of stuff. And you know how they were picking people up with no recourse and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I was still a bit electronically naive, not realizing that the federal government, if they really wanted to find me, or if I was making enough of a difference, they would have found me and shut me down. But, you know, I guess my sphere of influence then was much too small to have an effect. So I guess I was never really a threat like other, you know, like other sites were, you know. But
it is
a matter of keeping on, and I can tell you that this has been going on. Personally, this has been going on pre-2000. So, I mean, under various different names and aliases, and that is what it's going to take. You have to do it however you are able to do it, you know. And I'm glad that we have a steady group of people that are here all of the times. And then we have people that come in and out all of the times. That is what it's going to take. And by the way, folks, remember you can listen to this podcast on iTunes. So tell your friends to get onto iTunes and find Politics Done Right, because they can actually listen, subscribe to it with iTunes and listen to it at their leisure if they're not able to do it live. But anyway, Robert, you wanted to say something else. Talk to me.
No, that's what I was covering. And you know, I guess finally, as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, I really believe that unless we create another party and the coffee party for people to elect, we don't really know what we're getting into. And as I mentioned before, once we get people out of office and we replace them, what are we replacing them with?
Well, you know,
I think it's a matter of choice.
That's a good point. But here's the deal. Like I was talking to Pankins before, we're a movement, right? Now, this movement is big enough for all kinds of groups. And I think whether it would be an offspring of the coffee party or an offset of the coffee party or something that coffee party springs off or whatever, I have just one person on the coffee party board. There are several. But my wish would be to keep the coffee party as a movement, and anything that has to do with who you're going to put into office or whatever, while we can support policy, some other group that has that credibility to push that should do that, so that we don't corrupt. Once you start getting into politics with people or whatever, that's the easiest way to drive wedges between peoples, which we don't really need to do as a part of coffee party. Some other group, even if it's a piece of the coffee party or whatever, can do that without having that influence on what this particular movement is all about. But saying that now, we only have a few minutes by, so I want to get folks to give a closing statement. I'm going to start, Linda, I'd like you to say something. You were great on the call. I'd like you to say something to close out. So you're on, Linda. Linda? Okay, I guess Linda is busy. So John, give me a closing statement.
Yeah, one thing that's going on now with the immigration thing about, you know, come in and we'll handle everything in regards to all the you know, the immigration issues. Well, they haven't straightened out the you know, it is themselves. So who is going to come forward? Even the president's wrong on that one. You know, who's going to come forward when? It is so messed up that people know that they won't be back into the country, or they'll be paying back taxes and stuff like that. Everybody's wrong on that issue.
Now, let me tell you something, Jenna, and then I'm going to go to Joe. When you have questions like that or statements like that or things like that, think about writing a little blog post and put it up at our site. You know, the thought of people from the coffee party, I'd like to, you know, when you say that, I'd like you to think about that a little bit more and hear what, you know, what deeper thoughts you can come up with results. Joe, you are on, my friend.
Hi, and once again, Egberto, another fabulous show. I'm glad I'm a Coffee Party member, number one. Number two, Coffee Party USA is a movement. I'll back you on that. I personally, as a movement, I'm an independent. I'm not in the Coffee Party to run a candidate for office. I prefer we motivate people to get the candidates they want in office that would represent themselves.
I agree with you, sir, 100%. Joe, I got to get to Rodrigo because we're running out of time. But thank you very much for being a constant listener, and we really value your opinions. And thank you for that wonderful opinion about the speed dial, buddy. Okay, Roberto.
What I'm going to do, Roberto, is I'm going to write some stuff up about that comment about what I think the coffee party should actually be involved as a party, because I'm really looking for a way to do it with a set of rules that we live by, especially facts and no money and things like that. But I'll write about it and let everybody comment. I think it's something to look at. Or I think we need to go after. I want a collective, similar to whatever we always talk about. I want a collective push against everything that is bad that's going on, and
Robert,
I want us to all, from all directions, to create a basis, you know, a list of things that we will, regardless of progressive, conservative, these core things we don't accept, and push it as hard as we can. And keep up the good work, everybody, and thanks for the conversation.
Thank you, Robert, as usual. I think this is going to be Jack Golden that just came back on. So, Jack, give me a quick one, my friend.
Okay, well, I wanted to say was we had a nonpartisan primary in California. I lived in California for 39 years.
Okay, Jack.
And it was very successful. I enjoyed that. That's one thing that will resolve the problem with gridlock in Congress.
Thank you, Jack. I got to go.
The States.
Thank you, Jack. I got to go. You're always welcome to call back in. Eric, give me a quick one, buddy.
Lawrence Lessig, in his book, Republic Lost, showed that every time that public opinion was at odds with what the moneyed interest, what lobbyists and big corporations wanted, Congress has voted in the last 30 years, Congress has voted where the money is. And this gun lobby thing is just the latest instance of it. And so really, all we really need to do is make Congress more afraid of people than they are of money, and then the public interest will rise to the top.
Excellent closer, Eric. Guys, thank you for calling in. Thank you for listening to Politics Done Right. Remember, Mondays, it's Press 1 for Democracy at 10 p.m. Eastern. On Tuesdays, it is The Middle Ground with Eric Beiler and Michael Charney at 8 p.m. Eastern. On Thursday, it is Lunch with Loudon. On Saturdays, that is 3 p.m. Eastern. And Saturdays, you know it's me. Thank you very much. You guys have a wonderful afternoon. I'm Egberto Willis, Politics Done Right. I'm calling out. Bye-bye.